We're going to talk this evening about loving one's enemies. And this is a deeply Christian idea. It comes right out of the Gospels. But of course, it resonates with Buddhist teaching as well. And so I'm going to start by reading a couple passages from the Christian Gospels. The Gospel according to St. Matthew. And I'll just say briefly, I know different people have different familiarities with the Bible. The New Testament is the Christian part of the Bible. And the first four books of the New Testament are called Gospels. And these are kind of biographies of Jesus. And then they're followed by letters and other things. But this gives the basic information about the person of Jesus, the four Gospels. And the part that I'm going to read in particular is from a passage in Matthew called the Sermon on the Mount. And it's three chapters in Matthew 5 through 7. Traditionalists would say that Jesus sat down and just said all these things at once. Biblical scholars now think that it's more sort of like a compilation of some of his best known statements into one kind of speech. But this is from the Sermon on the Mount, the first passage. You have heard it that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who insults a brother or sister is answerable to the court. And then slightly further on in that same passage. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? And so it's a very strong message. Love your enemies. And one of the fascinating things about that passage is, of course, he's doing this contrast. He's quoting Torah. And then saying, you have heard this, but what I tell you is. And you have to understand in the context of the time, Torah, the law of Moses, that was the highest law. That was God's law. And you were supposed to have utter reverence for that. And here he was come along saying, well, here's what Torah says, but here's how I'm improving on it, essentially. And in a way, he knew just by phrasing it this way, that he was going to create enemies. You know? And it's interesting because how can I say? I think there's this poisonous idea in our culture, the idea of being nice. I'm just going to be nice. And then I'll be nice to everyone, and I won't offend anyone. And usually what nice means is selling out our power and selling out our authenticity, you know, in order to be agreeable to everyone. If I'm going to be acting from my authenticity, then there are going to be times that I'm going to trigger other people's stuff and make enemies. And similarly, people acting in their authenticity can trigger my stuff, you know. And so it's important to realize that, you know, doesn't necessarily mean a failure on my part, just the fact that there are people who consider me an enemy or, you know, that sort of thing. And an enemy is really somebody we have othered. And so you might describe this, love your enemies, as an exhortation to love across boundaries of otherness. And I will say, just again, thinking about the Christian message, it's one of the things that's most astonishing to me when you read the narrative of the Gospels, is that Jesus is constantly making friends with and inviting the friendship of people who are social outcasts, people who are tax collectors, prostitutes, lepers, you know, zealots, all these people that had somehow been othered by the religious authorities. And he's going to feast with these people, and he's counting these people among his friends. And so again, this powerful lived out message of love across boundaries of otherness. And of course, we find similar teachings in Buddhism. I'll just read this passage from the Dhammapada. These are the opening verses of the Dhammapada. Our life is shaped by our mind. We become what we think. Suffering follows an evil thought as the wheels of a cart follow oxen that draw it. Our life is shaped by our mind. We become what we think. Joy follows a pure thought like a shadow that never leaves. He abused me. He attacked me. He defeated me. He robbed me. Those who dwell on such thoughts will never still their hatred. He abused me. He attacked me. He defeated me. He robbed me. Those who do not harbor such thoughts surely will become free from hatred. Hatred is never appeased by hatred in this world. By love alone is hatred appeased. This is a law eternal. There are those who do not realize that one day we all must die. But those who do realize this settle their quarrels. And so Buddhism casts it not only in talking about the importance of love, but really framing it in our common mortality. And you could just expand that to a view of our common vulnerability, the vulnerability of what it is to be human. And it's much harder to maintain anger towards someone when we start to recognize that you know, whatever their behavior was that angered me, came out of their own woundedness. And so what does it mean to love an enemy? Well, love, first of all, means kindness. It means acceptance. Love is a deep acceptance of who somebody is, you know. If someone comes at you with an agenda, you know, I need you to be this way and that way, that doesn't feel like love. Nobody wants to receive that, you know. You know, or I want to convince you that you're wrong about something. Like that doesn't feel like love at all. And of course, getting comfortable with outer otherness requires getting comfortable with inner otherness. Jung really talked a great deal about how we all carry inner otherness. And really any part of us that we, you know, that we've never wanted to feel, that we pushed away, we have othered. And the question is, what kind of love do we have across our boundaries of inner otherness? Are we reacting with love, or are we reacting with fear? Love and fear are really the two primary reactions toward otherness. You could say in this country that there are some forces that view others with compassion, with acceptance, with kindness, and there are other forces that view otherness as sources of threat. And, you know, we have these attitudes toward outer otherness, and they often mirror the ways that we relate to inner otherness. You know, if I can't stand if I'm afraid of confronting the otherness within, then quite likely I'm going to be pushing away the otherness I find outside of me. And so love across a boundary of otherness, love of enemies, takes tremendous courage. And it is, you know, and again, back to the Buddhist teaching, you know, the whole idea that the person who angers me or the person who offends me is my teacher. Because they've shown me some place where my ego is holding on. Somewhere where my ego is attached. And of course, that teaching is the last thing in the world we want to hear at the moment that we're angry at that other person, you know. Because when we're angry at that other person, we want to be justified. And I know I'm right, you know, we get into that state. But a lot of that, you know, anger and defense is about ego attachment. And it is a tremendous exercise in humility. To what extent can I just question, you know, hold in question the kind of anger or resentment that I have, you know, that I'm directing towards somebody else. And a curious thing about not even so much enemies, but even people we don't get along with, is sometimes we get profound truth from them, you know? Like sometimes there's a way that there's a kind of truth that we can't quite get from our friends and the people that care about us, that someone who doesn't really care too much for us will tell us, you know? And there can be tremendous value in the feedback that we get from someone that we, you know, that we've rubbed the wrong way, that kind of thing. And so it really is, it's subtle in many ways. So I think at this point I will share the quote sheet. Let's see. I put the link in chat. And so at the top I have the quotes from the Christian Gospels and the Dhammapada. Incidentally, the Dhammapada is one of the core texts of the Pali Canon, the fundamentalist Buddhist writings. And in some ways, the Dhammapada almost occupies the same place in Buddhism that the Sermon on the Mount occupies in Christianity. In other words, the Pali Canon is gigantic, and it's all, you know, every sutra begins with Buddha said this, Buddha said that. But scholars feel that the Dhammapada actually represents the authentic teaching, the actual words of the historical Buddha himself. So a long passage from a speech from Dr. King, a speech called the Love Your Enemies sermon. Now there's a final reason I think that Jesus says love your enemies. It is this. Love has within it a redemptive power, and there is a power there that eventually transforms individuals. That is why Jesus says, love your enemies. Because if you hate your enemies, you have no way to redeem and transform him. But if you love your enemies, you will discover at the very root of that love is the power of redemption. You just keep loving people and keep loving them, even though they're mistreating you. Here's the person who is a neighbor, and this person is doing something wrong to you and all that. Just keep being friendly to that person. Keep loving them. Don't do anything to embarrass them. Just keep loving them, and they can't stand it too long. Oh, they react in many ways in the beginning. They react with bitterness because they're mad that you love them like that. They react with guilt feelings, and sometimes they'll hate you a little more at that transition period, but just keep loving them. And by the power of love, they will break down under that load. That's love, you see. It is redemptive. And this is why Jesus says love. There's something about love that builds up and is creative. There's something about hate that tears down and is destructive. Love your enemies. And that is an extraordinary speech, an extraordinary sermon by Dr. King. La Rochefoucauld said, Our enemies come nearer to the truth in their opinions they form of us than we do in our opinions of ourselves. The opinions that we have of ourselves are often the least accurate, of course. Bishop Fleetwood said simply, our enemies will tell the rest with pleasure. And this whole idea that, you know, friends will tell the good parts of the stories, our enemies will tell the rest of the story with pleasure. Ben Franklin similarly says, love your enemies, for they shall tell you all your faults. Longfellow said, if we could read the secret history of our enemies, we should find in each man's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility. Very true. Lincoln said, I destroy my enemies when I make them my friends. And Lincoln was, of course, also a man who at the end of the Civil War, really the most bitter and painful conflict this country had ever been through, was talking about charity toward all and malice toward none. Gandhi said, it is easy enough to be friendly with one's friends, but to befriend the one who regards himself as your enemy is the quintessence of true religion. The other is mere business. G.K. Chesterton says, the Bible tells us to love our neighbors and also love our enemies, probably because they are generally the same people. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the theologian who died in a concentration camp, said, Jesus Christ lived in the midst of his enemies, and at the end all his disciples deserted him. On the cross he was utterly alone, surrounded by evildoers and mockers. For this cause he had to come, to bring peace to the enemies of God. So the Christian, too, belongs not in the seclusion of a cloistered life, but in the thick of foes. There is his commission, his work. And then he begins this long quote from Martin Luther. The kingdom is to be in the midst of your enemies, and he who will not suffer does not want to be of the kingdom of Christ. He wants to be among friends, to sit among roses and lilies, not with the bad people, but with the devout people. Oh, you blasphemers and betrayers of Christ, if Christ had done what you are doing, who would ever have been spared? From Nelson Mandela, if you want to make peace with your enemy, you have to work with your enemy. Then he becomes your partner. The Dalai Lama says, it is the enemy who can truly teach us to practice the virtues of compassion and tolerance. Sally Kempton says, it's hard to fight an enemy who has outposts in your own head. Stephen King says, only enemies speak the truth. Friends and lovers lie endlessly, caught in the web of duty. Shannon Alder says, bitter people are not interested in what you say, but what you hide. And Jeanette Corin says, those who are difficult to love are difficult to love because they have gone through difficult things which have made them the way they are. What you need to do is to forgive. What they need is your love.